Accession number 30095, rail 2.
Okay. When we arrived at my bags, I got my duffel coat on, my balaclava, big gloves on. I went out there, and there was this Russian supply boat with petrol, diesel rather. And there was these women with the sleeves rolled up over the next shirt. Well, I felt such a twit, you know, here we were, could hardly see ourselves. And he said, come aboard. So I thought, yes, I went. So I went aboard, and I had green tea, is it? They have. And they took me all over their boat. I don't think anybody knew I was aboard. Well, a bit nosy. And they were full of pride for what England was doing, you know, with war. And they made a great fuss of me and then put me back on board, you know. I'd never forgotten that to this day, and I actually got a photograph of this chap. He was the engineer, I think. But they made me very welcome. They said, all right. People are all right. It's blinking off. It's the staff, you know. Anyway, so then we came back, and then I was...
How long did it take to do the trip to Murmansk unescorted?
Oh, I don't think I can remember. I don't think I can remember. I can't. It couldn't have been very long. We went from Scarpa Flow. We picked them up there and went straight across. That's probably about a couple of days, something like that. It was day and night.
Did Anthony even come back with you as well?
No. Oh, that's the point. Did they come back to us? Yes, I think they did. I think we were there two days. That's right. Yes, we did bring them back. You're quite right. I've forgotten about that. Yes. But we didn't know what it was, but we had a guess after seeing the Russian chap talking about the Second Front, you know, that this was important. I guess that's what it was about. So that was that. Then I put in for my NCO's course, and so I was sent back to Deal. Now, Deal now was doing NCO courses, but not the training squads. And I went through all the drill and range work. I became a sniper. Then they said, right, you're now going to Portsmouth for your upper gunnery rate to go with your rank. That was a Q2. So I went to Whale Island at Portsmouth to do my gunnery. And when I qualified for that, I was sent back to Southsea. Now, I thought I was going back to the ship. He said, no, you're not going back to the ship. I said, well, where am I going? You go to Southsea and report it, so and so forth. So I went there and was met by this elderly Marine officer, old school. So he said, it pains me to do this, because I was a corporal then. It pains me to do this, he said, but you are going to make you a sergeant. Normally, you'd be in the Corps about 15 years before you got to a sergeant. He said, but I've got to do what I'm told. Anyway. He said, you are attached to an LCG-5. Well, what's that? He said, well, you're in combined operations now. Oh. I'm not going back to my ship. What ship? I said, the Kent. Oh, no, you're a combined operation. Go to the room so-and-so or house so-and-so. You'll find your crew waiting to be trained. And so I met my detachment and my Marine officer. So I had to drill them, take them down to Whale Island to teach them gun drill and so forth. How to man a 4.7, that's what the guns were. And I started to drill them as well on the front there, you know, keep them going. And then the day came, we went to East Ham Docks. Well, you can imagine, after being on a smart cruiser, I looked at this dirty old boat, still with workmen on board. It was always, oh, God. You know, after this, it's terrible. And that was the LCG-5. So the well deck, the front where I showed you the ramp, that was open. That wasn't welded over. And I met the petty officer, the coxswain and the motorman. The PO's mess was a tiny little room with three bunks, one for the coxswain, one for me, and one for the motor mechanic. The main deck was two rows of tables for the sea and a galley. And at the end of that was a magazine. And then you had to go up this ramp, steps, down into the open well deck for your loos and showers. Yeah? And I thought, it's just unbelievable, this is. The engine room, you could ride a bike round. Whereas in American engine rooms, we went to, I'll tell you later on, you'll see what I meant. Because for the Navy is concerned, that was the most powerful, most important part of the engine, which is true. You know, without that, we are useless, aren't we? So the engines were very, very well kept. And we were sort of getting shown around, getting the craft ready when we went to just on the east coast there, one of the islands, to ammunition ship, forgotten the name of it now. Anyway, we had ammunition ship there, got all the ammunition on board, came back to the dock, and they said, right, go back and de-ammunition. We've had an accident. We're not going to sail. So he said, what's that? He said, well, you're going back, you're going to have to leave the ship and go to ports, to South Sea. Apparently, because we know now what it was, there were landing craft being converted all over the country, and these two, 16 and 15, I think, were coming over from Belfast, where they'd been fitted out, and it hit a storm just off the Welsh coast. And, of course, the water poured in over the bows, and down they went, like that, got a pellet out of water. So they said, that's a tragedy. Now, how somebody didn't think of that in the first place, you know, because they're going to send these things abroad. So we had to go down there and stay there while they repaired this and covered in the upper deck. Then we went back to East Ham and commissioned the ship. And we took her down to Falmouth, and where we congregated. And then from Falmouth we went across the Bay of Biscay. Everybody on board was sick. Got a flat bottom, awful things to go. I was very lucky, never had a seasickness. And we got to Gibraltar. While we were on the way down to Bell on the coast there, we were told that submarines were hunting around. Well, it's not an easy craft to hit, a flat bottom boat, you know, but we were a bit worried about it, because we've got nothing, no escort at all. But nothing happened, fortunately. We got to picked up the Navy at Gibraltar. Then we went to Gibraltar through the straits to Djeli, a North African port, and where all the other landing craft was there as well. They were obviously getting ready for Sicily. And but it was all right. The skipper was very good. Once or twice he took us out and to another bay where we could go swimming and that sort of thing, you know. So we're just killing time waiting, really. And doing gun drill, obviously, keep on rehearsing gun drill. Then the day came to go to sea.
Did you have any contact with the local population?
Yes, we went ashore. We were allowed to go ashore, and they were quite friendly. In fact, we went. We used to go ashore. I think we went ashore for a weekend camp, really, just to make sure the chaps could learn to bivouac, make sure they knew how to bivouac and that sort of thing. They were quite friendly. There was a little high street there. I remember that quite well. And the funny thing there was that there's a big lighthouse there, and one day the chaps had been swimming, jumping off this. They came, come on, Sarge, it's your turn, dive. Well, I hadn't dived before, that way, it's a hell of a height. Of course, I hadn't do it, didn't I? I went down like a sack of spuds, you know, but I did. I survived it, and that was all right. And then, of course, we suddenly set sail. You know, you can signal off we went. And we went round to... Oh, by the way, while we were at the Djeli, we were attached to the Americans. This is when I saw the American landing craft, and there you have to crawl on your hands and knees around the engine space, but in the deck space, water butts, you know, ice water, you name it, oh, different life altogether. But they were saying, oh, you're going to protect us and all this. I'd say, yes, we're going to protect you. That's all right. We'll be there, you know. And off we went. And while we were on our way there, there was a gale. And the skipper was looking at his map, and the wind blew it off. And he lost his bearings. And the dawn came, and we were on the wrong beach. So he immediately went to cut across to get to Lucado, which is the beach we were on. We saw a lot of bodies and parachutes in the water. And we thought, oh my God, it must have been pretty awful. Anyway, we got to Lucado, and apparently there was no resistance. The Germans had gone inland, left the Italians to do it. And the first thing we saw was a train going along on the coastline, you know. The Americans were using that because the Italians had just they just gave in. They didn't want to fight, you know. The bigger fighting came inland later on when the Germans were up in the high ground. And we then learnt that the Americans flew in our paratroopers on that particular beach. And when the flak came up, they pressed the red button. It got windy, and they all jumped into the sea. Never been published. But we were told about it afterwards. That's what we saw. Pretty awful.
Were there any survivors?
I don't know. I don't know. There were a lot of parachutes in the water, a lot of bodies in the water, you know. Because they were... they just jumped, and they're told to jump, they jump, thinking it was beach, you know. But it was all kept very quiet, I think, because, you know, it mustn't upset the Americans. We were off Lucado for 3 days. And we saw bodies going past, you know, that in the landing up had been killed and so forth, but we didn't lose any ships that one, fortunately. And then we came back to North Africa. It's Bizerta Harbour. And Bizerta Harbour's got a long neck and a big lake at the back. And we came through there. We could see a lot of wreckage in the water. And then we went into the bay, and we beached Ferryville, which is a French village. We beached there, and we'd go ashore. We met a French family and gave us a meal and chatted to us, very friendly, really. And then I had my 21st birthday on the forecastle of my boat of that ship, which was great fun. And I think we all drank too much. And the next morning, believe it or not, we were ready for ammunition ship. So we set sail, and all the big LSTs, the Landy Craft, one of the big ones, all lined up there. We were going across their bows to a certain place to pick up ammunition, and the skipper was still a bit tight. And our bridge hit the doors of one of these things and whipped it open. You can imagine what happened, you know. Every door's open, everybody was shouting and bawling, the skipper just went full ahead. He didn't stop to ask any questions, and it could have crippled the bridge a bit that way. And then we came into this place where the ammunition ship was, and there you had to, you know, there's a regulation of how far you are from the shell for the fusing. But of course, it couldn't work on our ship, could it? It wasn't big enough. So they had to, all my crew had to take the ammunition on the stern, bring it up to me. I sat at the far point of the bow, defusing all the shells ready for the raising. Laughing, ready. God, I got sunstroke. That evening I was quite sick, apparently, and they put me to bed for a night. Right, the next morning I got a bit of sunstroke going because it was so hot. And then we set sail for Salerno. And I was still doing landings at night. And we arrived off the Bay of Salerno in the dawn. So they had to stop the convoy, didn't they? Of course, the Germans started to bomb us because they can't. They had to go in at night, you see, in those days. It was crazy, isn't it, really? And so they obviously knew we were coming, and all that night we did the landings. I don't know how many shells we fired, but we go in with the landing craft firing at the beaches all the time, and then get radio controlled after that to fire. We could fire to 8 miles inland, so we'd be dropping shells ahead of the force. So in the morning we sort of said, oh well, they're ashore, the skipper said, I think just we'll send a dinghy ashore and see if there's anybody wants any help. So I took a crew in, and we went in there a little bit, and I saw this soldier, which I thought was a soldier, running across the field, you see. So we arrested him, ripped his shirt off, and he was an Italian soldier. Well, I hadn't got the guts to arrest him, quite honestly. Poor man. So I said, go on, clear off, you know. He was obviously... They left all the Italians on there, and the Germans went inland. And we came across a base, Italian base. All the ammunition was all nicely laid out. All the rifles were all laid out there. And they're just gone, like that. I think I managed to get a bayonet for a memo, which I still got today. And then suddenly we got a powerboat, and MTB, came alongside and said, stand by to take off troops. The Germans are attacking seriously, pulling back. So we got ourselves all ready. And anyway, at last minute, the landing force stopped it and pushed them back, and then the base was safe. So they said, right, we were to go to Amalfi for a rest. So we were the first British troops to land at Amalfi. The Americans had been there already, I think, and they weren't very welcomed. But they gave us tremendous welcome. We went ashore, and you know, they were kissing us and bugging us and all everything like that. It was a lovely little place, Amalfi, lovely. So we stayed there a couple of days, and then we were told to go back to Djeli. So we came back to Djeli, and they said that we were to stand down for a while, because Djeli was quite safe then. In the meantime, I had a signal from my father, who was recovering on the other side of Algiers from sandfly fever, at his ordnance corps. And apparently he was doing on the... Olive Oil Commission. Olive oil was money in those days over there, and he was there with the troops controlling the supply. So I went to the base captain. I said, could I have compassionate leave? He said, what? I said, no, not. My father is convalescing at Algiers. Do you think I could go and see him? He said, have we got time? So he said, yes. He said, tell you what I'll do. I'll give you 7 days leave, plus travel. He said, there's a minesweeper going tonight to Algiers. You can go in that one. So I handed over to my corporal. I said, I should be back in a week. Well, I've never been aboard a minesweeper before. The first time in my life I was sick. God, they're like a cork, you know, they are. God, dear, oh dear, it's awful. Anyway, my father said I was to go to the officers' mess at Algiers, where you'll be picked up by an ambulance. This is where the sick officers go. So I reported there at 6 o'clock, and sure enough, the ambulance came, and I went to this place. It's about 20 kilometres west of then. It was a French holiday place, all little bungalows and so forth, and that's where they were recuperating. So I met my dad, and we went, because he, like me, he was a great one for investigating. So he said, we'll go up in the hills and talk to the Arabs and what have you, you know. So we did this, and again, very, very, very welcome. Anyway, my 7 days were up. I had to take my stripes off because I had no sergeant's mess, but they made a great fuss of me. Then I went back, reported to the naval base at Algiers. So I said, I'm ready to go home. Well, I don't know how we're going to get you home back. I said, why? He said, well, nothing's going east. Everything's going west, D-Day. So I said, well, signal my ship, won't you? Tell them where I am. Oh, yes, we'll send a signal. We'll be right, but nothing is going east at all. No aircraft, no vehicle at all. Everything is going west. You have to stay here. Which I didn't like it very much. It's just the base was just below the, in Algiers, where the prostitutes are, you know.
Red Light District.
Hmm?
Red Light District.
Red Light District, yes. There's a name for it. I couldn't remember. It was just below there. And I used to go and look around. They had shows there going for us, that sort of thing, and in the town. And so I was kicking my heels, bored to tears. Every morning I used to report to the signal people, you heard anything on my ship? No. They know you're here. It's okay. And one day, it was quite high, I saw an LCG coming into the harbour. My God, I couldn't get down there quicker. I grabbed my bag, so I hadn't got much kit with me, flew down. I didn't talk to anybody. I went straight down there. One of my mates said, where the bloody hell have you been? You've been reported missing. Absent without leave. I said, oh no. He said, you'll be ready for court-martial. I said, the Navy told me they sent a signal every day saying I was, never got it, he said. And we've got engine trouble, we've popped in for there. He said, we're going to Gibraltar, where we're congregating there. So we went straight to Gibraltar, so we went aboard. Skipper said, now, what the bloody hell all is about? I said, look, and I told him, as I've just told you. And he said, right, he said, well, we'll believe you. I said, well, I'm sorry, it's true. I said, who wanted to leave out here in the middle of the desert sort of thing? So I was okay, and then we came back to Portsmouth and decommissioned and went to rest camp in Kent somewhere, in Ramsgate, I think it was there. That's the first time we'd had any sort of decent food. And then we recommissioned LCG 18, which was to be before D-Day. And we took her up to Bowness to be From there we did D-Day. We were up at Pearl Harbor. What's the name? Dear, I have names. Just outside Portsmouth. It'll come to me in a minute. That's where we were, and we were going on trials, tests and so forth. We used to go around the Isle of Wight and invade South Sea and Hayling Island. We used to go for there quite a lot, doing dummy runs, etc.
What was the procedure for doing a shore landing?
Well, you go through the fact of going in, you know, doing dummy firing, etc. like that, and swinging round and firing broadside on, that sort of thing. That's what we used to do. To get used to doing, and sort of general control as a squadron, and then coming back on the last one we did, we hit it. The weather was pretty awful. We were across the Isle of Wight, and the coxswain said to me, "Would you take the wheel?" I knew how to take the wheel by then. Of course, I've been trained. He said, "Because I've been on it for 2 hours and I've got nowhere at all." So I took the wheel, and there was like trying to keep your nose straight. And I was there for about 2 hours. When I came out, the Isle of Wight, needle's still there, you know. Because you're flat bottom, you're just a trough. So that's the sort of ship it was. Anyway, we went back in, and then we were told to get ready. It's an ammunition ship. And we sailed into the Solent. Now, I'd never seen a sight like it. The Solent was virtually solid with shipping. So much so, you felt that you could walk from Portsmouth to the Isle of Wight by jumping from ship to ship. It was a marvellous sight. And of course, they got the balloons up as well. How Germany never bombed us, I shall never know. We were sitting targets, really. And we were waiting there, and the skipper had gone off to the marine officer and the skipper had gone off to their briefing and had a signal from an LST. And it was my old schoolmate in the Navy. He'd been signaling all ships, was I aboard? And they found me, so he came across on a dinghy, and he said, what about going ashore? I said, I'm not allowed to go ashore. He said, nobody will know, they're all too busy. So we went ashore, and I was going to see my aunt, who was the ex-mayor of Ryde. So we started to have a drink all the way up. Towards the top, I said, I'm not going to start getting drunk too much, I think I don't want to see my aunt. And at the time we went back, so we came back. And of course, that night we sailed. Now this time, of course, it was a daytime invasion. They'd learnt the lesson, and we went out through there, and we met in the middle of the channel. They called it Piccadilly Circus. Have you heard that before? Where all the landing craft from all along the coast at Mep, and then you went into your flotillas, and I was on Sword Beach. And we went in, as expected. God, I don't know how many rounds we fired. We were firing the whole time, going in with the landing craft, right up until they landed. And then we would flank and start shelling ahead of them, sideways on, broadside on, according to radio control, up to 8 miles, like that. And then when they had more or less secured the bridgehead, we then used to sail towards Le Havre, and anything we saw that could be a gun sight, we would open fire. And if it responded, then we would get the hell out of it and let the big ships behind us shell the place. This was our role. And one or two got hit by it, but we got away with it. And then another funny story, I think it was day two, I got raging toothache in the morning. And it really was. I mean, if you get really bad toothache, I was terrible. And I said to Skipper, I got a dreadful toothache. And he said, well, I better send you to the hospital ship. So they caught a speedboat came along and they took me up to the hospital ship. And there was I, on day two, sitting in a dentist's chair, watching all the people going ashore, all the craft going ashore. Never forgotten that to this day. I've still got the crown today to put on, believe it or not. And then I came back and then we carried on for 3 weeks doing that, up and down. And then we were at night time. Have you ever heard of the, oh dear, names again. Come back to me in a minute. All landing craft went in a big half circle, toe to tail, to stop German craft coming in behind the troops, MTBs, two men submarine, that sort of thing. A bit of a, you know, thing, trout line. That's it, the trout line. One or two of our ship did get hit by it, but we got away with it, our boat, fortunately. But every night we did this, and the MTBs did try to come in, you know, and then, of course, we would fire back at them from our own guns. Because a 4.7 is a quick-firing gun, quite a useful gun. And nothing got through, fortunately, so trout line was very important, really. And then suddenly we got an instruction to go back to England. We went into Beauty River.
How much resistance had there been at Sword Beach? How much resistance had there been at Sword Beach?
Well, it was pretty bloody, I think. But again, the Germans did retreat to start with, you know. But I think it was pretty awful. It wasn't as bad as the Americans. I think they had the worst beach. I really do. I mean, I saw the film, did you? Did you see the film? That was quite true. That was pretty bad. I saw in the morning we saw a lot of landing craft sunk, you know, so obviously they had a bit of a battle. But you see, the LCGs were, quite a few of us, very quick firing guns, and being close going in with them, we could actually see what we were firing at. And we were actually firing at that beach all the time. We must have blown up a lot, killed a lot of people, I should think. But it blew up the mines and that sort of thing, and they went ashore. But I don't think it was as bad as the American, but it was pretty bad, let's face it. I think they all had a rare time, but it was pretty good, really, how we got in, really. We were strong. I think the trouble came later on, you know, when the Germans started building up more resistance, because they didn't expect it to land there, you know, that you. The Germans didn't expect us there. There was the signals had been sent out somewhere that we were going to land further down. And that's where he put all his forces for. So there was a bit of luck there. So it wasn't pretty strongly defended, you know. But there were a lot of batteries there, obviously, firing at us all the time. But once we got ashore, it was interesting because we were firing by radio. So we knew what we were firing at. We just told a target and we'd fire, you know, until to about 8 miles inland, really.
So there's communication with the troops?
Oh, yeah. Well, they had a gunner. Their own gunners went there. They had a... There were specially trained officers, you know, that did this sort of thing. They went ashore with a landing craft, immediately set up a radio station and controlled it from there. A little funny story for you. You know the LSTs, the big one I told you about. We were one of these... Oops.